This is George Newbern, the voice of Superman.
This is Kid Triner, the voice of the Green Arrow. And you are listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
The original Justice League has become a memory.
I am resigning from the Justice League.
What's going to happen to the League now?
We rebuild. From the ashes of that great conflict, a new team has arisen. A much, much bigger team.
Each of you brings something different to the table.
Old friends, new heroes. And as usual, plenty of bad guys jumping up to get beat down.
Calm down, and I'll let you go.
How about you kiss my ass?
Watch out, evildoers. There's nowhere to run. Because this year, they're all around you. The League is unlimited. All-new original series, starring every superhero worth cheering for. And then some. Justice League Unlimited.
Where am I exactly?
Among friends.
There's strength in numbers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 148 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, and the gentleman that runs our Twitter page. That is right, back for yet another month. It is Liam. Liam, welcome to a new month, which of course means we are switching gears and changing up programs for the month. And if the good folks at home listened to last week's episode, they would already know. But we are excited to kick off a new month with a new series here.
That's right. And we are returning to the world of Justice League Unlimited, as we spoke about last week, as you mentioned, Cal. And yeah, we're picking it up with another exciting episode, another in these sort of early building block episodes of the series. But in addition to any sort of plot devices that may come back later on, we also just get a big, the biggest sample size of just how big and massive this new Justice League is in this episode.
That is very true. Yeah, this is a action-packed episode. It felt a lot like a modern-day superhero movie. Lots of robots to smash, non-living entities to destroy, a giant army, lots of punching and explosions with an mass army of technology to destroy and maim. So, with many superheroes abounding. So we will talk about some of the similarities perhaps in more modern day superheroes when we get into our plot, as we will in just a moment. But before we do, as we do each and every week, we kick things off with the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which you did mention is Darkheart. This, of course, being a Justice League Unlimited Season 1 episode, debuted back on December the 11th, 2004, putting us coming up here on the 17-year anniversary as we wind down 2021. So very, very, very old am I.
That's right. And as you mentioned, this is for the episode Darkheart, which was written by Warren Ellis. It was directed by Dan Reba, with music by Christopher Carter and Michael McQuestion, and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. Most of the League battles with powerful alien nanotechnology. Is that the waves of self-replicating robots cannot be simply destroyed. The diminutive Atom shrinks himself to stop the robots from the inside.
Well, that description just kept going and going and going and going, much like the Energizer Bunny. It was quite the twist and turns there that we took with that description. Somebody wanted to use up all of the space for that description. So not the best IMDb description, in my opinion here, Liam. But they can't all be winners, as we quite often say. But yeah, we did get quite the synopsis here. It does end up being a very Atom-centric episode, which I guess is something that was unique and was actually pretty interesting. And this platform, I feel like going forward, if they had expanded beyond the seasons that they ended up doing, they really could have flexed their muscle and been able to explore some of these characters that really didn't get focal pointed. We see that more as we get into the Cadmus story arc. We get more of the Question and the Huntress and more Black Canary and Green Arrow characters, obviously, that were never explored on some of the older episodes, whether it be Justice League or even Superman the Animated Series or Batman the Animated Series. So it is a very Adam-centric episode. He does end up being the hero of our story, but it is a very interesting tale here. We open up and there are two rock climbers that stumble upon this. I don't know, like it's just a giant piece of technology, essentially. Mm-hmm. And we learn later on, of course, that this piece of technology originated some 50,000 years, perhaps, in the past, used as a weapon launched from one planet to another, designed once it launched and devoured that planet to then replicate itself and continue its process. It somehow, without really any explanation, has made its way to Earth, where it is going to continue to do the same through Liam, the age-old crutch used in any science fiction and comic book tale, nanotechnology.
That should buy them some time to get the townspeople out. Now I want to learn about these things. I think the main spacecraft is replicating. There's some kind of molecular machine inside each of them. A sort of dark heart building around itself.
That's right. This is a very classic sort of sci-fi crutch, I guess would be the, for lack of a better word, as you said. It's interesting in that it creates a immediate problem because it's this endless army, endless waves of robots, as you said, and they can't. There's no limit to how many they can create, as they can replicate themselves, not just through metal and other technology, but through rock, through minerals, like through any and all matter can be converted into these things. So it's really a losing battle, no matter how many, we see almost all of sort of the top tier, most powerful members of the League. We see Superman, Supergirl, Wonder Woman, Captain Atom, Green Lantern, all of these superpowered characters, all, you know, they're blowing up, they're destroying all these robots, and they just keep coming. And so it at a certain point, they realize that they need another tactic, which leads to the introduction of the Atom. And yeah, I think that leads to an interesting second part of the episode where, yes, we have a lot of action, we have a lot of fun with seeing all of these heroes in action, but then it becomes of how can this guy, even as smart as he is, how can you stop this thing that has already torn apart planets and can basically, as he's, if one scrap of this thing is left intact, it'll start all over and we'll have the same problem again. So him trying to find this sort of creative way, he can't punch his way out of it, despite him at one point trying to just grow bigger than the heart and punching it. He finally comes up with sort of a more creative way, which is the dark heart is quite literal in the sense that all of these machines have this sort of central powering mechanism that acts as a heart, carrying matter into it and then powering the machines that then go out to convert more matter. And so he literally gives it a heart attack by clogging its artery. And that's sort of how we have our finale there. It's not a big punch out with Superman and Wonder Woman or anything. It's more of it's mind over matter, almost literally in this case, I think. And I think that's clever, and you know, it's a good way to utilize a character like the Atom, who we've seen previously in an episode we reviewed, The Return, where once again he was he really has had to go up against the heavy hitters here. He was teaming up with after Amazo previously, and now here he is fighting this, you know, never ending army of robots. So it is interesting how the smallest or like maybe least physically imposing member of the Justice League ends up having to be the guy to kind of pull them out of these really big problems.
Yeah, it is an awesome way to showcase that character, especially, you know, I guess if you're ranking superheroes, he's had more exposure over the last maybe decade than he did certainly in this era. He may have made some appearances on the Super Friends or one of those like superpowers spinoff episodes. I honestly don't know if I think he did, but with that said, he certainly isn't a top air, an A-list, or even probably a B-list DC superhero. So the fact that they were able to use him in multiple episodes and showcase this unique powers is pretty awesome. I really love, I mean, that's a testimony to Justice League Unlimited as a show, as I mentioned, like having some of these ancillary characters, and we'll get into visuals and animation, you know, the myriad of people that show up in the background of this episode. And that's one, I think being in the background is one thing. It's kind of a cool throwaway, if you know, type appearance, but having really the Atom be the person, as you said, that solves this problem using his intellect, using his knowledge, using his experience and technology to defeat this seemingly impossible to defeat behemoth, one that can't just be punched to death or destroyed with heat vision, or, you know, that no matter how hard they fight, just continues to sort of have their way with the Justice League. So that I did appreciate. With that said, the episode itself, though, to me, ends up very much mirroring, as I sort of mentioned in the open, a modern day superhero flick, a la Avengers, or a la even the original Justice League movie, or a la pretty much any superhero movie nowadays, where there happens to be a faceless army of drones that the Justice League can kill, or your heroes can kill and maim and destroy. Right. And tear apart. And this one, now obviously this was kind of done before that was the norm. This is 2004 as opposed to 2007 and on, or whenever Disney took over and started launching Marvel movies. But it's sort of a trope that now I've sort of become numb to. Did you find yourself comparing it at all to sort of those modern day superhero blockbusters that we've seen?
A little bit. I think everything, this included everything post Phantom Menace, had this sort of syndrome, where we create this, you know, this legion, you know, this unlimited army of robots. And what do we do to stop them? Well, we can't kill them all because there's limitless amounts of them. So we have to go to the control hub, or the main, there's usually like a, you know, metaphorical or literal, a switch, which then shuts them all down, which is also on the table in this episode, as well as once the Atom is able to kind of, as we said, give the main Dark Heart a heart attack. He is all of the other robot spiders and robot tigers and stuff that we'll talk a little bit more about in visuals, just kind of shut off and stop working. So it's one of those things where you create this invincible army seemingly, but then you also have that problem where it's like, well, we can't have this army needs to be defeated. And we've already established that the League doesn't have the numbers to take them out by brute force. So they just all shut down when the big one shuts down. So yeah, it's definitely a trope, you know, that goes back several years. And like I said, I think that's why focusing it on the Atom was the right call, because there is a lot of this where, at least for the first 10 minutes or so, where it feels like it's just watching guys just swat at the ground. And it's cool because we get to see all these different superheroes in action, but it feels very light on like satisfying action, because they're just these little, because for the most part, they're just fighting these small spiders. It's a lot of like swiping at the ground for a while there. So
Again, we'll get more into that in visuals, but yeah, I definitely think focusing it on the Atom was the right call, just because it actually had a better focus point at that point. Even if the end result is that Phantom Menace style, we blow up the one thing and everybody shuts down.
Yeah, I do appreciate the fact that. Yeah, I've already established. I like the Atom part of it. With that said, the only other major plot point that I think and ultimately foreshadows and plays to me that plays later on into some of the Cadmus arc and some of the overall Justice League Unlimited tale and story arc, that being that. Initially, the Justice League decides once the Darkheart is sort of expanding and they realize that the robots are not going to be stopped just by stomping on them or by fighting them, that they're replicating at too high of a rate to stop, the Justice League call up to Jean, who's at the Watchtower, and he launches a giant space beam, the other favorite trope of superhero movies of the last decade or so. This one going in reverse, though. Instead of a giant sky beam, it's a space beam coming down from the sky. So I guess that's a little bit different. But sky beam comes down and creates a giant trench. And this gives the U.S. Army and General Eiling a little bit of something to be a little bit concerned about, I'd say.
Wonder Woman, can you hear me? I'm in the town of Goldhanger, two clicks from you, and we're not going to get everyone out in time.
You won't have to, General. The Watchtower is now in stationary orbit over the site. I'm clearing the binary fusion generator for firing.
The what?
It converts our space station's entire power output into a single shot. It's a gun with the punch of a small nuclear weapon, General.
You're not serious.
We're very serious. Now pull your men back. We can't hit the aliens directly because it could scatter them for miles, so we're going to be burning a trench around them.
Fall back! Go!
That is interesting, and it speaks to, again, plot points we'll get into more in when we cover kind of the big, heavy, meatier parts of this Cadmus arc. But it is this thing where the Justice League, of their own volition, without letting anyone know, built a giant cannon that Martian Manhunter very matter-of-factly states they have complete control over, and packs the punch of a small nuke. And they're just like, all right, this is what we're doing. Pull your men back, General. And like, it's one of those things where you do build up another bit of, like, if you think about this, if you think about what Superman did in the series finale of Superman Legacy, it's like, they're right to be concerned about this. Right. They're absolutely within their rights to be concerned. Obviously, the way they go about it is very underhanded and shady, and perhaps if they shared these concerns with Superman and the rest of the League up front, there could have been a dialogue. But as it stands, like, you totally see why that's very alarming for anyone, you know, especially like someone in a position of national security like General Eiling is, to hear, oh, by the way, we have a nuclear space laser that we could just fire down whenever we feel like it.
Yeah, so that is that is calls into the old question of, you know, are the superheroes trustworthy enough? And as you said, that plays into those plot points from Legacy and some of the, you know, the Justice Lords and some of the other things that we end up kind of rehashing later on. So it is very interesting that they set that plot point up here. I think General Eiling's reaction, initial reaction of just kind of being caught off guard, willing to watch and see what happens, but then letting them know at the end that they're not really cool with that. And that's something that's going to be discussed at a later point. Other than that, it is a very much a punching and kicking robots episode. There is a lot of action that occurs here. I don't know that all of the action is very interesting visually. We'll talk about it in a moment. It didn't seem as exciting as I thought it should be. It seemed like a lot of times it may just be an excuse to throw a bunch of superheroes in there. And this is one of those episodes that has one of the few episodes that has what seems like the majority of the Justice League, the newly expanded roster featured in it. So I imagine that for the director, Dan Reba, and the storyboard artists, that this was, fun to kind of sneak in some of these other ancillary characters and characters that aren't used very often. We'll talk about that in just a moment here. But other than that, I didn't love the plot. Like it's very, I guess the plot of how this robot gets there isn't fully explained until the very end. They dig this trench that's supposed to stop the robots from being able to cross it for a period of time, just enough for you to see Ray Palmer. And then when they flash back, suddenly the trench is just gone for no reason. Like it's just not there anymore. They don't really explain how the robots got across it, but they have. So with that said, I guess we can get into our scores here for the plot. But I went ahead and gave plot a 6 out of 10 for this week's episode. What about you?
Yeah, I'm just a tick higher at a 7 out of 10. I think it's an enjoyable 22 minutes from a plot standpoint, and we get a couple of, as we said, both Eiling taking the dark heart at the end, and then also the space laser stuff. I think you are laying some groundwork here, and even if you remove that from it, it's still, I thought, a pretty fun, enjoyable story. So 7 out of 10.
That's fair. Yeah, I think it reminds me a little bit of when you're binge watching a show. It's one of those episodes that's a filler episode. It's like, you know that they have to do it because there has to be some story depth to build up. But a lot of times it feels like it's like, okay, there are plots, there are points from this episode that you know move forward, but I just didn't love the episode as a whole itself. It was just kind of like, all right, when's this over? When are they going to figure out how to defeat the ever-growing army of robots? So I guess that will lead us into our visual and animation, Liam. As we mentioned here, there are a lot of superheroes featured in this episode. Many, many, many of them, including many of the characters that a lot of people probably aren't familiar with. We have an entire roster here of people that we could go through. So seeing that,
and in fact, I will, if you would like me to.
I would love it. Why don't we go down the entire list of who was featured in this week's episode?
All right. And I think some of these you only see in the background very quickly, but this is everyone.
Still counts.
That we see. Absolutely. And this is not counting Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, the Atom, the main ones. But here's everyone else that is featured sort of in the battle or getting off or getting onto a javelin at some point. We have, in alphabetical order, thanks to the DCAU wiki for this, Aquaman, Atom Smasher, Aztec, Black Canary, Blue Devil, Booster Gold, Captain Atom, Commander Steel, Crimson Avenger, Crimson Fox, Dr. Fate, Dr. Light, Dr. Midnight, Elongated Man, Fire, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Gypsy, Hawk, Hourman, Huntress, Ice, Nemesis, Obsidian, Red Tornado, Rocket Red, Shining Knight and his steed, Winged Victory, Stargirl, Starman, Steel, Stripe, Supergirl, The Ray, Vibe, Vigilante, Vixen, and Wildcat.
My goodness. But standing ovation for Liam right now. Seriously.
Oh, I'm out of breath.
Yeah, man. Take a breather here. So with that, it is absolutely jam-packed. And at times, I feel like they just answered. We talked about it, I think, on some of those earlier episodes, especially, you know, maybe the first two or three episodes of the series, that there wasn't, it was supposed to be Justice League Unlimited, and yet most episodes featured two or three of the new characters.
Right.
Well, they heard your complaints, people of Earth, and they responded by giving you that gigantic roster, including what would the parting shot of the episode, a great pan out of the entire Justice League roster that was there, that a shot that was used in many promotional materials and commercials, and even I think at some point maybe even the intro or the outro for the episode. So yes, very, very large roster featured here. I think some of my issues with it, and this could go back to plot, I guess, but mm-hmm. also some of the visuals. We'll talk about CGI in a second, because that is its own thing. But while we're talking about this myriad of different people here, there were some people that you're like, okay, these people clearly are in the right place. You have, you know, powerhouses like Green Lantern and Superman, and even Adam Smasher, your Starman, Captain Atom. These are very powerful, in the right place. Dr. Light, you know, Supergirl. These are people that should be here battling these robots. Even Batman. Okay, I get it. He's got a plane. He's got toys. That's fine. But then you have people like the Huntress and Shining Knight and Vigilante. Vigilante has two revolvers. Shining Knight has a sword and a flying horse, but mostly a sword. Huntress has a bow staff.
Like, has a big stick.
Yeah, what are we, why are they there? What, like, I get it. Like, you can't, all of the superheroes that you have at your availability aren't necessarily that superpowered, overpowered, with the ability to shoot lasers out of their eyes, or, you know, call into the power of nuclear warheads or whatever. But like, come on, what are these? Am I to understand that they are in somewhat in any way helpful in these situations?
Wildcat is there.
There's one shot where he's just in the background swinging endlessly at these things. Just whoosh, it's like the same repeated animation over and over.
Yes. Again. Yes. It's pretty funny. Yeah, I do question, like, yeah, fire and ice. Sure. They can be useful. The Crimson Avenger. not quite so sure. But yeah, I mean, like I said, it's cool to see all these different heroes out here. To me, like I said, the first part of the episode isn't very all that visually interesting, because it is mostly just people swatting at the ground. And then I think there's a very like sudden twist, which is when Batman's plane gets attacked, and by these, and we'll talk more about the visuals of the Darkheart creatures in a second here. And he's falling out of the sky. He doesn't have a parachute. He doesn't have anything. Superman catches him at the last minute. The Justice League kind of regroups. They make their plan. Wonder Woman's going to get Adam to the ship, and they're all going to protect her to get him there. And Superman says, "Let's go to work." And from there, I think it gets awesome for about 3 minutes. then you're actually like following individual members around, and you're seeing how their powers are sort of interacting with it, and some creative things where like a bunch of the little spider ones will climb on Wonder Woman, and she sort of, you know, exerts and knocks them all back. You know, same thing, we see Starman fighting them. At one point they're kind of getting overwhelmed, and then the Ray and Green Lantern and Supergirl show up to provide like air support, and that's really cool. There's a shot of where they're all kind of just punching at the line, and all of a sudden you see Adam Smasher's giant foot stomp down on a bunch of them. So there are some cool moments in those few minutes. We mentioned the vigilante, as outmatched as he clearly is on his little motorcycle with his guns. When he gets knocked down and it looks like he's about to be he's dead meat, the Shining Knight on his winged victory shows up and knocks them back, and then he hitches a ride with Shining Knight, and they do. I do think there's some cool moments, but yeah, it's like it takes a while for us to get there, and then it's only kind of maybe a couple minutes long in this little stretch as they're trying to get the Atom to the Darkheart. And yeah, so like that's fun, but yeah, it doesn't feel like we maximized the potential of having this entire league in battle all at once. At least not maybe how they do later on in the series.
Yeah, it just okay. I'm gonna switch over now because the most distracting thing to me and the thing that took me out a lot of the battle was the use of CGI and whatever they decided to do as far as creating the animation for the actual army of these little creatures. I guess it was CGI. It looked almost like static images at times that they were just moving around. I did not like the animation for the majority of the battle. I thought it was very distracting. There were a lot of pan shots and like distance shots, that showed the large portions of the army, and they were just kind of, again, they were static images that were sort of vibrating almost to give the appearance that they were moving or marching or, and it just, they didn't look like, and I get it. Like, I think it's not one of those things that you could have possibly have individually animated, but at the same time, they clearly spent a lot of money on making the CGI that looks god awful to show the Watchtower opening up and birthing its shot cannon or shotgun cannon. Like, they could have done so much better for some of those shots. I will say that the robots themselves, very interesting looking. I think you briefly mentioned the they're sort of like robot dog. They're a little bit bigger than the spider creatures. They are very visually interesting. They attack the bat plane at one point, and four of them land on the bat plane and sort of disassemble it. And there's an interesting sequence where Batman, he blows the cockpit off first and then sits in the cockpit and throws Batarang sitting down. I thought that was super cool to knock a couple of them off and then has to do yeah. battle. And ultimately the bat plane meets its demise and he is shot down and thankfully caught by Superman. And I love that Batman just kept his cool the entire time. He calling for Superman's help, rescued just a few feet before his impending doom.
That was the last of my useful armaments. I can't do anymore. To all points. I could use some air support, since I can't fly at all. Now would be good. The spiders are forcing us back, and the mothership is releasing mechanical attack tigers to protect them.
Yeah, the CGI that was used in this, CGI appears pretty early on. They used it for the helicopters that the army used. They used it for, as I mentioned, the visualization of the Watchtower. There was additional, like, there was another point where they were using it too. I guess some of those exterior and larger pan shots mm-hmm. of the Darkheart were also CGI. I've voiced very often here, we've talked about this before, going all the way back to episode 101 in the archives at dcaureview.com for initiation, where we talked about, I am not a fan of this like very wonky, herky jerky, like frame rates missing CGI.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we've seen it done okay. Even recently in an episode of Batman Beyond we covered where they definitely were using CGI as part of the background, but they kind of gave it this nice cel shading and it fit very well with the scene. So we know there is a capability to do it. And I'm sure a lot of it maybe comes down to just time. But I think the shot that sticks out to me is when the watchtower is moving into position to fire. And I guess it didn't dawn on me that the JLU watchtower is just always CGI. Because the regular Justice League watchtower was a static image from my recollection. So,
I believe so. Yes.
So it's just a CGI thing moving, and then the thing at the bottom opens up to reveal the cannon, and it's like I don't know, man. Like it just doesn't look great, and it doesn't even have that sort of cell shading on top of it to kind of at least make it feel like it's part of the world.
Right.
So yeah, it definitely sticks out. I don't feel like the javelin stuck out as much to me. I don't know if it's because of the way that one is shaded a little bit differently, but I think Batman's ship or Batman, the bat plane is also CGI, but maybe because that's so dark, you don't notice the kind of the wonky edges and stuff of it as much. But I thought there's definitely some moments there where it sticks out and it just doesn't quite jive with the rest of the animation. It just doesn't fit. Like I said, that being said, I think there are some really cool visuals in the last few minutes there with the Atom choking the artery to starve the dark heart of the matter and all of that.
Giving an actual literal heart attack to the dark heart.
Atom, we're about out of time. What's happening in there?
It didn't break. I couldn't break the heart.
It what?
I couldn't break the heart, but I bet I can give it a heart attack. These arteries are feeding liquefied matter into the heart. If I can interrupt that flow, starve it of matter, build up some pressure.
I thought that was pretty cool. And even the introductory scene, I love that scene of the Atom. It's kind of all foggy and the Atom is walking through kind of like, thigh high water. And then this giant snake bursts out of the water and he's sort of fighting with it. And then eventually you pull up and you realize he's actually in a Petri dish. Just a very classic, like, size shifting thing, and I thought that was a really clever way to introduce this guy. Again, he's already been in an episode by this point, but this one sort of being him in his element. He's working at his lab in Boston when Superman shows up. So,
Professor Palmer, we've lost you off the scanner. Professor?
Reconfigure for the automata limit, Katie. I know he's down here somewhere. Could be pretty small by now. And he just found me. He's bigger than my car now, Katie. Personally, I blame you.
How can it possibly be my fault?
Because otherwise it would be my fault. That can't be right. I'm a professor. I have the core control and I can see the problem. The chemical wash made a bad nanochip. I can shut him down by... Okay, I'm just going to be direct.
Professor Palmer! Professor? Ray!
I'm going to lay here for a while, Katie. I'm old now and I get tired.
company, Professor. Sirius Company.
I'm coming up. Stand by. Hello, Superman. What brings you to Boston?
Omega level situation.
Katie, please inform the front office that I'm going to be out for a while.
I do think there's some pretty cool visuals despite some other wonky things, and so I settled on a 7 out of 10 for visuals.
Gotcha. I went a little bit lower. I went a 5 out of 10. The CGI really messed with me. There are a couple things that I will point out that are interesting visually. We get Batman wielding these what look like oversized batarang things. They're like, I don't know what like, they are.
Like batarang nunchucks or something.
There's yeah.
Two of them, and he's holding like the center of them, and he kind of spins them around, but they have the edges like they're batarangs.
It looks like an accessory that would come with a Kenner Batman figure. I'm just going to throw that
100%, out. 100%.
I will say, though, I don't know if you noticed this, and I don't know what it was, but to me, I felt like a lot of people looked off model for this episode. A lot of people were super skinny and had more of a less streamlined, less straight, more like warbly is always the word that I use, warbly appearance from what I saw from the animation. Not quite on model a lot of times. And even in that final pan out scene, if you look, Batman's face is very odd looking, very off model. Just not as normal as I was used to, especially with some of the Justice League, and a little more cartoony and less straight streamlined than I'm used to. I mean, that's nitpicking, but that's something that I did definitely notice.
There's a really distracting moment where, or at least it was distracting for me, where it's right in the kind of the opening scene. There's the army's kind of calling in saying, you know, we're under attack. And Superman and Wonder Woman are talking, and then they sort of pan out to show, it's a great shot where they pan out to show all of the leaguers flying towards it. And Wonder Woman's driving one of the javelins, and inside like a bunch of leaguers with her, I think Green Arrow and Crimson Fox, and to her left, like over her shoulder, when they get a close up is Vixen. And like Vixen has some pretty memorable episodes for the rest of the series that mm-hmm. we will get to down the line. Like, not only does like her eyes were not facing the same direction, which you chalk up to just a mistake, but like her, to your point, like she looked a little skinnier. Her hair looked longer. I knew this existed. Like Huntress is in a different costume than when correct. We actually finally get around to introducing her. They redesigned that suit. I think when she has her first full appearance in Double Date, a few episodes down the line here. But so yeah, there's definitely some people who I think just hadn't been like fully. Hadn't been fully realized, and then some people may just be a victim of just, well, they're a background character, we don't have to really worry about how on model they are. But then when you get that one or 2 second close up and you're like, oh my god, what's wrong with Dixon? it really sticks out for a second there,
for sure. I think we'd be remiss, the last visual, or this also could have been discussed in plot, how did they sneak beyond Standards and Practices the gimmick of the Atom riding in Wonder Woman's bosom?
Yeah, they really linger on that shot for a couple seconds too. Like, that's like, I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know
which storyboard artist was all horned up and decided to go ahead and see if they could slip that one in there. Oh my
god. They really kind of, cuz like when he's riding with Superman, he rides in Superman's ear. But then, and at first Wonder Woman's holding him in her hand, but then she has to fight, so she's like, "All right, here you go." And they like very slowly pan down to her chest. He's like hanging on to the tip of like the eagle or whatever on her breastplate. And then it's just like, they just stay there. for like an extra second or two, and you're like, all right, let's, you know, let's
wrap it up.
This is for children.
Let's keep it moving here. We get it. We get it. Somebody here is living out a weird fantasy. Let's move it along here. Yeah. That was always, even as a child, like watching that, I was like, I'm uncomfortable with this. I mean, granted, I was 16 when I saw this, but still, I'm uncomfortable with this. Can we not hang around like Wonder Woman's?
Well, I think even in more quote unquote adult material, that would be kind of frowned upon, at least nowadays, where it's like, wow, it's very male gazy, right? To hang very on objective, that shot. Yeah.
Some objectification going on for sure.
So yeah, even if you remove the context of this being a cartoon for children, primarily, it's still a little like, we don't need to do that.
Yeah. Well, figured we shouldn't ignore the elephant in the room. So
it's fair.
All right, let's move on to our next category, Liam, which will be music for this week. I think you said, was it Dynamic Music Partners who worked on this one?
Yes, particularly Christopher Carter and Michael McQuestion are credited.
I did not have a ton of music here. I think the music plays a important role in the background. There is one commercial break where it kind of stands out. I think that's initially when Adam gets inside the Darkheart. The music starts to swell towards a couple of the commercial breaks or the pre-cut commercial breaks. But I did not have a ton of notes here for the music. That and I guess the scene as Batman is plummeting towards the Earth. The music begins to swell as he's sort of approaching the ground at a rapid state, as we mentioned. What about you? What did you have as far as musical notes are concerned?
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting because we have, you know, several established leaguers, and in addition to all of the new guys and girls we see in action, there's plenty of established leaguers with their own theme, and we don't really hear the Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman or even Michael McQuestion's Green Lantern themes that he's brought back, dating back to the In Brightest Day episode of Superman. So yeah, they don't really rely on that, on the sort of the known themes. It is mostly seems sort of original, sort of fast paced fight music. We get a little bit of electric. I didn't even really notice a ton of the electric guitar. It felt a little bit more like, regular Justice League music, where it's just a lot of a little bit more strings, a little bit, again, fast paced. Nothing wrong with it, but didn't really stick out as like a lot of moments. I thought the moment when Wonder Woman is kind of covered in the spiders and then bursts out of them and then flies more directly towards the heart, and as you mentioned, the Atom jumps out of her bosom and down into the Darkheart. I thought the music kind of swelled there, and then as he's sort of working his way through trying to figure out how to stop this thing, I thought they again added in some nice atmosphere, but nothing really that really stuck out for me, and I ended up giving music a 6 out of 10.
I gave it the exact same score, Liam, a 6 out of 10, believe it or not. Yeah, I think you're right. I had kind of neglected to mention that Wonder Woman scene, actually, despite the initial unpleasantness. I think that Wonder Woman sequence is actually one of the most interesting, most impressive, because you really get to see her kind of be this badass Amazonian warrior that battles her way through this line of robots in order to get Adam to where he needs to go. So I really, really did like that sequence. But yeah, other than that, there is a little bit of creepiness, I think, at the beginning when the rock climbers are first introduced to the Darkheart. There is some some spooky atmospheric music that's played in the background, and again, I think it's more in sound design. It's not music, but the sound effect that they use when the Atom uses his powers is very reminiscent of something that you would have heard on the Super Friends or something like that. I appreciated that sound effect, that it's like a vibrating vibrating fan or something like that. It's very interesting. So that's more in sound design, less than music. But yeah, same thing for music. Nothing terribly stood out. I think that commercial break was the only time that I really noticed the electric guitar come in heavier. So yeah, more synth and those artificial strings this week than we're typically used to with the Justice League Unlimited soundtrack. So, all right, Liam. Well, as we mentioned, we do have a large cast visually here, but that doesn't always mean just because in Justice League Unlimited, not a lot of characters spoke. So we do have some notable people to speak about with our voice casting this week. So let's get into that and talk about this week's voice stars.
Absolutely. We have just in minor roles, we have Catherine Cavadini, who plays Ray Palmer's lab assistant, who I only wanted to mention because she was Blossom in the Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, okay. Another Cartoon Network staple.
Absolutely. So I thought she was worth shouting out there. And then I guess we could save the big guest stars for last, but our main Justice Leaguers, as you mentioned, we don't have a lot. In fact, only the four of the original seven are voiced in this episode, despite Green Lantern also appearing. We have George Newbern as Superman. We have Carl Lumbly as the Martian Manhunter. He, of course, for most of this series, and actually it later on becomes a plot point, but he doesn't really ever leave the tower. So he's just kind of up there running point, and then he kind of disappears from the episode once the cannon is fired, as it's established here that basically once that cannon is fired, the watchtower has no power for an hour. So we get a little bit of Carl Lumbly there. We have Kevin Conroy, of course, as Batman. Does a fun job. He has a little bit of levity to it, both in initially when he drops the ice nuke on the Darkheart's main ship, and talking about how he had to freeze the Gotham River once upon a time, and then later on, as you mentioned, when he is describing to everyone that he needs to be caught because he's falling very rapidly and cannot fly at all, which I thought was it's a very funny and memorable moment, and just his completely deadpan delivery of it is it's one of those things that only Kevin Conroy's Batman can do. And then we have Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, who does a solid, like I said, most of the leaguers here. It's mostly exposition moving and sort of strategizing, and hey, you go here, you know, Batman sort of running point at one point and, you know, calling in air support from Green Lantern and Supergirl and things like that. And Wonder Woman and Superman, and they're all talking to each other throughout the episode, but it's not a big character moment episode for any of our main leaguers there.
Yeah, it's not. We established this from the get-go that this was an Adam-centric movie or episode. We'll talk about him, I'm sure, in just a second here, but that's okay. Superman does get the closing line there as the camera sort of pans out to the entirety of the league and sort of has the exclamation point placed on the episode.
Show him a weapon that destroyed its creators and every other thing it saw, and he wants to play with it. What's to stop history from repeating itself right here on Earth?
We are.
But yeah, not a lot is asked for him. Susan Eisenberg has a little bit to do, obviously, in her dialogue. But yeah, most of it tends to be exposition and certainly kind of filling in the gaps and trying to explain what's going on for the majority of our typical heavy hitters.
Yeah, absolutely. And that will bring us to our two big guest stars, this time in a minor role, though he does return several times throughout the rest of the series. We have J.K. Simmons, J. Jonah Jameson himself, playing General Wade Eiling. Obviously, like I said, has quite a bit more to do throughout the rest of the series, but cool to kind of just throw him in here as again, he's not the main focus of the episode, but you see, I think kind of a great scene is that scene where Martian Manhunter is describing the giant space laser to him. And he's just like, you what? Like, I think he's his sort of exasperation at this. And then sort of the switch there where he then, you know, goes back into giving orders to try to evacuate the town and all that. I think he does a good job there. And obviously he's a pro's pro as an actor. So.
Yeah, absolutely. He's very effective. Obviously we know him in very different roles, and certainly now is the voice of Farmers Insurance. We are farmers. but he's an icon. His acting isn't over the top in this episode, which I'm sure there might have been a temptation to do, and certainly he plays that over the top charismatic role in the Spider-Man movies. So for him to kind of tone it down, and even as a general in the army, you would think that he would have maybe a little bit more free range to turn up the volume a little bit, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But he plays it very understatedly for knowing who it is. Like, he plays it understatedly, and I think that actually pulls off a greater performance. Like you said, his reaction when he finds out that the watchtower is a weapon, his sort of comeback to Superman and the Atom as they're collecting the Darkheart at the end, also a little bit of witty dialogue there and come back to them. So we know that he actually, of course, is going to return, and certainly in the Cadmus arc, and he has his own episode, very interesting outcome to this character later on. But yeah, I think he does a really, really strong job.
I don't suppose you need any help destroying that. Wouldn't want that technology falling into the wrong hands.
We could learn a lot from it. It'd almost beat the Justice League, after all.
Why would you need something to do that, General?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because it turns out the Justice League has had a secret space-based weapon of mass destruction all along. And we're going to be talking about that someday. Believe me. Ma'am.
Agreed. And then, of course, the man of the hour... That being, as we said, this is an Atom story, and the voice of the Atom is the returning John C. McGinley, who, of course, we've talked about a couple times, but probably most famously from Office Space, as well as, of course, playing Dr. Cox on Scrubs for nine years, I believe that show ran. So yeah. It's a very recognizable voice, and I think in the past I've mentioned that it was a little bit distracting to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've just gotten a little more used to it, or it's just because he had a little bit more to do this time. But I thought he did a really good job, and he's kind of funny in moments. He's got some humor to him, and he also is able to provide sort of the gravity there at the end there when he's getting a little bit more desperate, when he tries to just break the machine and it doesn't work, and he has to kind of again think his way out of the problem. I there's a lot of exposition as he's kind of throwing out, okay, this is like a heart, I'm going to choke it and choke its artery and give it a heart attack, and that could come off very expositional and kind of robotic, but I think he does a good job of kind of spewing out a lot of techno jargon.
No, I think he does a really great job. I think we had mentioned it, and maybe it may have bothered you a little bit more than it did me when we covered the return, which you can hear in the archives at DCAUreview.com, as we covered it in our Green Lantern month just a few months ago. But I would say this is certainly gave him the opportunity to flex that muscle a little bit. He's not as over the top as that performance of Dr. Cox or even his character in Office Space are. He's very much subdued. It's more of a laid back performance. I really enjoyed it. I think you're right. The dialogue maybe in some ways may have worked against him slightly because a lot of it was exposition. But I really appreciate his line at the end talking to Superman about the dangers of the government collecting this technology and why they would be dumb enough to do so. But I think it's a pretty strong performance from him. The voice cast, pretty decent. There was a lot of exposition that was required, so maybe not the strongest of performances. There wasn't a whole ton of emotion that had to be shown either, with the exception maybe at the end in that scene as he's sort of hurriedly trying to figure out how to defeat this monster. So not mm-hmm. a lot of range required for this episode, but I still think it was pretty strong all around. So I ended up giving it a final score of 7 out of 10. What about you?
I went a little bit higher. I went 8 out of 10. I think mostly on the strength of Mr. McGinley's performance there. I think he just does a good job when he's talking to Batman and Superman about this being sort of a nightmare of what everyone was always sort of concerned about when it comes to the field of nanotechnology and some of that stuff. I think he really does a good job of mixing that in. And at the same time, like I said, the humor moments when Batman and Superman are talking and he's like, "Hey, it's getting sweaty in here." And he's like, kind of trying to peer over Superman's ear. He's like, "Is that Batman?" Like, just his delivery of that line was so funny.
Where's the Atom?
It's getting sweaty in here. Is that Batman?
Find Wonder Woman and get us down.
And again, if you've seen his work on Scrubs, even though that show was a comedy, he's, you know, obviously was a very gifted dramatic actor as well. And seeing him be able to do sort of the big super heroic over the top stuff, as well as sort of these smaller kind of funny, quirky moments, I thought he really pulled that off. And again, when he's talking to his assistant about how, you know, he's old and he gets tired, I'm just gonna lay here for a minute, I thought, like, he's so funny in some of these scenes while still not feeling like he's taking away or not treating the situation seriously when it's go time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't disagree with you. Pretty strong, some good funny moments. All right, Liam, well, that will wrap us up and get us to our final scores for this week's episode. Totaling everything I have here, I end up with a final score of 24 out of 40.
And I am a tick higher. I ended up with a final score of 28 out of 40.
Uh-oh. I don't know if that's disagreement alarm worthy, but 4 points is it feels like 10 points a lot of times in our world here.
That's so right, yeah.
So with that said, Liam, I guess it is time to discuss rewatchability with this week's episode. Now, we have established that there are many threads that are established here, sort of some of them which have been continued, the general distrust that the government seems to be building against the Justice League due to prior events, that sort of thread is continued in here. But we have some things that are seriously set up that come into play well into the next season, the next half season, and then later on down the line here. So where do you fall as far as rewatchability is concerned on this one? Obviously, neither of us gave it a huge score, a little bit, I guess that would be a C or so grade from me, and maybe a C+ from you. So neither of us really gave it a high grade, but where does this fall as far as rewatchability is concerned for you?
I think you kind of have to watch it, especially if you're zeroing in on this Cadmus arc, because both the Dark Heart itself, what it can do, and of course the space laser, not to mention characters like General Eiling coming back. Like, there's a lot here that, even though in the moment it doesn't feel that important, there's a lot of future episodes pulled directly from stuff that happened in this episode. So I think it is an almost must watch if you're trying to watch, like I said, especially if you're trying to track kind of the entire Cadmus arc through JLU.
Yeah, I agree with you. Even though I didn't give it a glowing review for the final score, it is pivotal, integral to that story arc. It is fun. Like, if you're just sitting back and you want to sit back and watch an episode with your kids and not really think a whole lot, there's a lot of action that happens on the screen, as we discussed, a lot of punching, a lot of explosions, a lot of robots being destroyed. So it is a visual smorgasbord in that area. So I agree that this is, and as you said, just being integral to the rest of that Cadmus story arc, which obviously is the maybe best story arc in the history of the DCAU. Yeah, you're going to want to need this as an introduction to kind of understand some of that stuff later.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam. Well, that would begin to wrap us up. Thank you, everybody, for checking us out for this week. Don't forget, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. We are on Anchor. We're pretty much anywhere that you can find a podcast. You might even be able to get it with two tin cans and a string. I'm not sure, but definitely check it out. If your podcast app allows you to leave us a rating, either 5 stars or a review, we would appreciate that greatly. That helps get the algorithm working, get people to listen to our program. If you want to support the podcast, you can check out our store. Go to dcaureview.com, click on the store tab at the top, get yourself a shirt, a hat, a mug, a sticker, do something to support the podcast. We would love that. Don't forget, you can also our podcast stream on YouTube, Liam, every single week. We are part of the Pod Tower. As we mentioned last week, there has been a soft launch of that and a full launch coming soon. Mm-hmm. But people can subscribe to that channel. If you are a YouTube, if you consume your podcasts via YouTube regularly, you can do that. And even if you don't, go give that channel a subscribe anyway, because not only do you get great programs from us, the DCAU Review, but our friends over at Tim Talk are also on that channel. So you'll be able to find their episodes as well as amazing content from the amazing DCAU content creators over at Watchtower Database. So it's a fun place to get a lot of DCAU content, more maybe than you can handle, but definitely will leave you smiling for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Definitely excited to be a part of that. And of course, recently we did our first episode of Discuss This League, which had a certain Pod Tower theme to it, which was certainly not an accident, as we had Maddie from DCAU Watchtower, from the Watchtower Database, and Chris from Tim Talk on with us. So if for some reason you haven't checked that out yet, definitely give that a listen. And wherever you check us out, though, whether audio, video, or otherwise, I think that's pretty much it. Audio or video are kind of your only options, but either way, we always appreciate that. And as always, we want to hear feedback from you. Hit us up on our socials at DCAU Review on Twitter and Instagram.
That's right. And we haven't launched the meal service, the DCAU Review meal service yet, so you can't quite taste it yet, but we're working on it. Maybe 2022, we'll see. Liam, coming up though, next week we are staying right here with Justice League Unlimited, which means we will be covering another episode next week. Why don't you tell the good folks at home what episode that will be?
That's right, and we are moving a little bit into the second season of Justice League Unlimited. Just barely. We're just kind of scratching the surface. Won't get too far in just yet. But next week, we are coming back with another Green Arrow focus episode. But this time, he's not alone, as we also have our proper introductions to the Black Canary and Wildcat. In next week's episode, we will be reviewing called The Cat and the Canary.
Go figure. And it was pretty cool to hear Mr. Schreiner do our intro this week.
Yeah, how about that?
The voice of the Green Arrow. Pretty cool, if I do say so myself. So it'd be nice to have an episode focused on his Green Arrow next week. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
We'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.